Okay. We are up to this week. We're going to do the night of Yehuda. Sorry for the delay. He may be Zeuche in this honor to get a week too. Let's see. So, the night of Yehuda, I happen to love talking about the night of Yehuda because I have a special affinity and special connection to the night of Yehuda. So, who was the night of Yehuda? What was his name? Yechezkel Landau. Fine, amazing. Now, excuse me, what were the names of his farm were a little bit odd, right? Night of Yehuda was one of them, and the Tzlach was another one. Why? Because the Night of Yehuda was named after his father. His father was one of the members of the Vada Arba Aratzis, which was the governing body. The Polish kingdom gave them, as we've mentioned in the past, that you're able to govern yourself, collect your own taxes, the Jews from the Jews, and Bezdin had real power. This is not like, you know, the separation of church and state that we have today, where every church or every religious body has their powers and the state has their powers. They had real power to execute whatever they decided. And they collected the taxes and gave it to the Polish kingdom. So his father, Yehuda, was a member of the Vada Arba Aratzis, which was quite chashuv. His mother's name was Chaya. Tzion Lenefesh Chaya. That's the Tzlach. We all heard of the Tzlach. It stands for the acronym Tzion Lenefesh Chaya. Now, how do you see the name Yechezkel there? Because Yechezkel is Begematria Tzion. That's why all of his farm have the word Tzion. Ahavas Tzion are all of his drushes. Tzion is Begematria Yechezkel. Great. So, I told my wife, we have to have a Yechezkel. Why? You got it. My name's Yehuda, and Tzion Lenefesh Chaya. Unbelievable. We have to have a Yechezkel. So I told this to a friend.
Or a Tzion.
Right. I'm picking Yechezkel, a little more yeshivish. So, but definitely, it works. I go, and I tell this to a friend. He says, you know, it's so chaval. He was a Levi. He was a Yechezkel Segal Landau. He was a Levi. So, Baruch Hashem, I'm here to just share news that I am a Levi. And now you remember their names forever and ever. Yehuda and Chaya, the parents of Yechezkel HaLevi Landau. So where is he born? He was born in the city of Apta. This is not well before Chassidus. Right before Chassidus, in the city of Apta. There was no Apta Rav yet. In the times of Nehuda Yehuda? Yeah. So he was born in, let's do this, Tuf Ayin Dalet. It's sadistic. By now, it's sadistic. But we're going to do it anyway. Tuf Ayin Dalet is 474 plus 1240. 474 plus 1240. 474 plus 1240. 1714. Thank you, doctor. Thank you to the doc. Well, he bailed us out tonight. And 1714. So 1714 is before the Aftarov was in business. And he was born to his father, Yehuda. Now, what else do we know about him? By the time he was 18, what did he learn, actually? He learned by the Rav of Apta, as well as another yeshiva. I'm blanking out. I don't recall where else he learned. By the time he was 18, he was married to a woman, Liba, from the city of Dubna. Yeah, where are we? We are in Western Ukraine. Western Ukraine, near Lemberg, Dubna, Lvov. Lemberg and Lvov, Lviv are all the same city, right? Depending on which time period. Lemberg and Lviv. Lviv is in today's news. Lvov was 100 years ago. Lemberg was before that. Yeah. So, we're in Western Ukraine, and the Night of Yehuda now moves to his in-laws. That's the way it worked. You move in with the in-laws, and you are supported. And it comes with a price. You live with them. So he lives in Dubna, and his father-in-law actually relocates to the city of Brot, or Brody. Yeah, Brody. Brody was also Galicia / Western, Southwestern, Ukraine. It's all there. It's still there. It's still there today. You could find it. Also, Brody or Brut, depending on the time period. And he goes and he joins the Klois. The Brody Klois. We've mentioned this in the past, just to recap. The Cloyes was these yeshiva-style shul. It was a gathering place where people learnt, and it was somewhat organized. It was like yeshiva, but unofficial. The Cloyes was like this little... it wasn't necessarily little, but that was the name of this place of meeting. So you can call it like an open-based medrash. It was called the Cloyes. So the Cloyes of Brody was one of the most prestigious and put out, so to speak, the greatest gedolim. It was actually started by his uncle or his cousin. It was a Landau, Rabbi Avram Landau, who started this Cloyes. And Reb Gershon Kitzever, anybody? Gershon Kitzever was the shvager, the brother-in-law of the Baal Shem Tov. He learned in the Brody Cloyes. Reb Chaim Sanzer, the first, right? We mentioned this. Reb Chaim Sanzer, not Reb Chaim Halberstam. Reb Chaim Halberstam was of Cloysenberg Halberstam fame, right? Sanz, not Cloysenberg yet. Sanz fame. Reb Chaim Sanzer was in the Cloyes of Brody. He's one of the biggest mikubalim of his generation. And the Noyid Behuda learned there as well. Okay, so there he goes. He's now surrounded by some of the greatest gedolim of his time. So he's there, and he quickly gains acclaim by the time he was 20, which I don't know when that happened, from 18, I don't know when they moved. By the time he was 20, he was already giving shiurim, and then he gets his first position in Yampala. I don't know where this is. I don't think it's too far. I don't think he moved all the way to Prague just then in Czech, but he opens a yeshiva in Yampala, and he's the Roshiva. And he has many, many talmidim. One of his talmidim were the Chaye Adam. The Chaye Adam learned by the Noi de Yehuda. Fun fact. Okay? Another one is the Tshuva Me'ahava. Tshuva Me'ahava's name was Reb Eliezer Fleckless. Okay? And his son, Reb Shmuel Landau, was also a talmid of his father, the Noi de Yehuda. He's there, and He's quickly gaining acclaim in the Olam HaTorah as being this tremendous Am Chacham. He also was tremendous physically. How do we know this? Because anyone who knows about Shiurim, how big is a Kizayis? So we spoke about this when we learned Kiddush Makom Sudha. We mentioned this in passing. How big is a Kizayis? Well, did our size of our olives change? Where did this all come from? Yeah? Just now we'll do a little Torah. We sometimes manage to get it in, sometimes not. It comes from a tzlach and tzachim. The tzlach, the Noi de Behuda, Tzion Lenefesh Chaya, goes and mentions in tzachim that there's two different ways that we calculate how big a kezias is. One of them has to do with an actual zayas. The other one has to do with size of fingers. Yeah, two different gemaras. And the question is, do they match up? So the Noi de Behuda says it must be that our kizesim are smaller because it doesn't even come close. The two measurements don't even meet. Yeah, depending on how I don't recall exactly. Blina there will get it. It's in Kuftes Vav in Psachim. I think the Tzlach is in somewhere over there. Kuftes Vav, Kuftes maybe over there in Tzlach, over there in Psachim. So he goes and he writes, the two measurements don't meet, so something has to give. What's going to give? The olive must have shrunk. Our olives must have shrunk. So the Tshuva Me'ahava, this is just fun facts. The Tshuva Me'ahava writes that I went to my Rebbe, and I said, Noi de Behuda, you're 6'4". You're huge. Your hands are humongous. Obviously, the calculations are not going to be the same. Take a guy, you know, a nice Jewish kid, 5'9", can't jump, right? And the calculations will be much closer. If you're 6'4 and you have tremendous hands, yeah, you're going to come to the conclusion that the olives have shrunk. And he writes that the Noi de Behuda laughed. Okay? Now, what does that do for us, l'halacha? Go. Sean, go for it. So, you know, shtika koida, he obviously gave in. He obviously agreed. He didn't refute him. So therefore, the tshuva me'ahava ends off the tshuva v'hoideli. And he obviously admitted to me because, look, he laughed. The Chazon Ish brings this down in Kuntras HaShiurim, Simen Lamed Tes, after Mukta, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in Chazon Ish and Aruch Chaim. He goes and he brings down the story and he says, ach, we don't have to give that any time of day because it's obviously a beautiful story, but that doesn't have any halachic weight because the Neid Behuda wrote it in Tshuvas, and we, this is a common theme, we are Talmidim and we follow the Neid Behuda. We don't follow hearsay from what a student claims was the inference from their conversation. Fascinating. This is such a fun point to debate because when you get to other areas, we're going to do a second one, Neid Behuda. It's been decided by circumstance. You can say anyone who witnessed and met him would know how great he was. So what are we going to say for next week? Again? L'Shem Ichud. So we'll say L'Shem Ichud. We'll do the L'Shem Ichud for next week. Mirz Hashem will talk about L'Shem Ichud. The famous tshuva of the Neid Behuda that L'Shem Ichud undermines the very function of a bracha. And therefore should not be said. Anyone daven Nusach Svard? Okay, this is a shocker. Yeah, so close your ears. So for all the rest of us, he was very anti L'Shem Ichud. Don't worry, there obviously is a defense. I'm telling you the opinion of Neid Behuda. There's no two ways about it. Don't say it. If you want to, again. So he was not anti-Hasidim. Ironically enough, he was not a misnagid. He was very close to the Gershon Kitzver. He did not come out against the movement. It happened in his lifetime. He critiques them, but he didn't come out against the tznuah. He didn't come out against it. Again? Yeah, Ramosha is too. Ramosha is too. So, but now again, nowadays many people have already an existing minig for the last 100, 150 years, so it's spilled milk, right? Maybe they shouldn't have changed, but they changed, and now it's a minig. Yeah? Great. So that's not like it's not a debated point anymore because now it's a minig, and it's an established minig for many generations. That's how minhagim get made. So now, I'll share with you what do we got? A fun story. Yeah, you ready for story time? Let's do it. So, you ready for story time? Okay, here we go. Story goes as follows. He told his son, Reb Shmuel, that you always have to be a Baal Chesed. And I'll tell you why. He said, there was a little kid, a Goyish kid, a Gentile, who I saw walking in the streets, and he was crying, because he was charged by his father, who was not very nice to him and not very sweet. The story is quoted in a storybook who supposedly that he heard it b'shem, Reb Shmuel, the son of the Neid Behuda, who said over the following story from his father. Okay? Definitely a few steps, but an interesting story nonetheless. So he goes and he says that the Neid Behuda told his son, you always have to be Goymel Chesed with everyone. Because you never know. So he said he one time saw a non-Jewish child going home crying his eyes out. He walks over to him and says, what happened? He says, I was given goods to sell, and I would sell them, and I don't know what happened to the money. I can't find the money. And I know what my father's going to do to me when I get home. It's the wording that he used was a makas retzach. He'll kill me, not just figuratively. He was a very violent man, and who knows what will be. The Neid Behuda sees this child in turmoil. This is already in Prague. When he was the Rav in Prague, we're going to get there next week. We have to get to Prague. We have to get to a few more things. Well, the rest of his farm and some more fun facts. He goes and he says that I gave him money. Whatever the wages that he was supposed to bring home, I gave it to him on the spot. Hand him the money and said, go home. Great. Many, many years later, I'm sitting and I get a knock at the door. And it's right before Pesach. And a non-Jew, a Gentile, walks into my house and says, Rabbi, Rabiner, you have no idea who I am. Let me tell you, I am that child that you gave me the money. Now, there's been, a collusion of all the bakers in town what they want to do. They want to make, this is, you know, Pesach season. They want to make all, they plan on poisoning all of the bread for Matzah Pesach. They all swore everyone to secrecy. I'm breaking this trust because I have so much gratitude to you. Now you have the knowledge. We never spoke, and he walks out. What does the Neid B'Hudah do? You see the Emunas Chachamim. It's such a powerful story. Assuming the story happened as it's written, it's an unbelievable lesson. The Neid B'Hudah, with his wit and his wisdom, goes and doesn't say, everyone, don't go and buy the... It's just going to cause, you know, everyone will find out. Everyone will... And then the rat will be discovered, and everything will explode. He gets up, Shvi Shal Pesach, and says, Rabbeisai, massive drusha. I'm giving a drusha. Everyone must be there in the big shul. And the whole entire kila comes, and the Nevi Huda gets up and he says, Rabbeisai, you know, we learned about HaChodesh Zalachem. We have the ability to be Mekadosh HaChodesh. He says, this year we missed it. There was a mistake in the calculations of the Kiddush HaChodesh, and there's one extra day of Pesach. Everyone must not eat any chametz for one extra day. And imagine, you get up, you hear the rabbi get up and say, yeah, the calendar's off. That's it. The calendar's off, right, yeah, who knows, Ibra HaChodesh. What happens? The entire Kehila, extra day of Pesach. Because they miscalculated. He doesn't say extra day of Pesach. That'll be, right, Baltosif. They don't go and eat any chametz, and he then notifies the authorities to check out the bread. It ends up hitting the fan. They put the bakers in jail, and everyone's saved because of the chesed that the Neid B'Hudah did to that non-Jew. Okay, there you go. That's part one. We'll continue with Neid B'Hudah, part two, next week.